One of the great privileges we have at Hope College is enjoying the relationship we have with our neighbors just to the south of us, Western Theological Seminary. The ability to share friendship, resources, space, and one of the great resources we get to celebrate tonight is sharing the Bass Preaching Festival, guided by the beloved Lindsay Small. I see you. And one of the ways that expresses, we get to share the preacher that they bring for their festival. It's my great honor to introduce you to the Reverend Dr. Anna Carter Florence. Dr. Florence is the Peter Marshall Associate Professor of Preaching at Columbia Seminary, our beloved president's alma mater, in Atlanta, Georgia. She's an author of many books and articles. She's a wife and a mother and a friend, but above all, she is a lover of Jesus, light from true light. Would you please give a warm Hope College welcome to the Reverend Dr. Anna Carter Florence.
Wow. They told me to be ready to have my mind blown by what I was about to experience tonight. So this is amazing to be here. So our scripture lesson tonight is from the first chapter of Exodus, moving into the second chapter. Listen now for what the Spirit is saying to you, right here, right now, this evening. Now, a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, "Look, the Israelite people are more numerous and more powerful than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, or they will increase, and in the event of war, join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land." Therefore, the Egyptians set taskmasters over the Israelites to oppress them with forced labor. The Israelites built supply cities, Pithom and Ramses, for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread, so that the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. The Egyptians became ruthless in imposing tasks on the Israelites and made their life bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and in every kind of field labor. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, "Every boy that is born to the Hebrews, you shall throw into the Nile. But you shall let every girl live." And now into the second chapter. Now a Hebrew man from the house of Levi went and married a Hebrew Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a fine baby, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and plastered it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds on the bank of the river. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. While her attendants walked beside the river, she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid to bring it. And when she opened it, she saw the child. He was crying, and she took pity on him. "This must be one of the Hebrews' children," she said. Then the baby's sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Yes." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child, her child, and nursed it. And when the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and she took him as her son. She named him Moses, because she said, "I drew him out of the water." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. What a perfect story. Pharaoh makes chaos, mother makes ark. Princess finds baby, sister brokers deal. Baby saved, Pharaoh foiled. A perfect story and great roles for girls, I might add. Not quite the Bible meets Frozen, but almost. So before we get into it, I want you to notice two things. The first is that the main characters are young people and their parents aren't around. That's important because this is a story about what happens when the young people are in charge. The second is that without this story, without these two girls in the reeds, there is no Moses. There is no Exodus. There is no liberation for the people of God, and there won't be unless the parents get off the stage and the young people set things in motion. So you've got your two stock roles for girls here. You've got a beautiful princess and a responsible big sister. You can pick either one. They're both good parts. Even for you guys who are out listening there, just use your imagination. You can be Pharaoh's daughter, clad in silks, dipping your lovely toes in the cool green water. Or you can be Moses' sister, alone in the reeds, keeping watch over her basket by night. You can be the powerful princess, or you can be the smart and resourceful big sister. Like I said, you can't lose because they are both strong characters. And while the text doesn't tell us how old they are, whether they are your age or even younger, what it does tell us is that each one of them had an inner rebel just waiting to be unleashed. Each of them was ready to set aside what she should do and work together on what they might do, which is what happens when you're down in the reeds. I want to walk through some of the story with you. It's familiar, perhaps, but you know how Scripture is. You hear it differently over time. So let's read it tonight the way the girls in this story lived it, as if the parents aren't around, which is an interesting interpretive lens when you think about it. Read as if your parents aren't watching. A lot of people my age could stand to do that. So you know the context. We're in Egypt, a world superpower in those days, and the Hebrews are the Egyptians' slaves. But the Hebrew population is growing. It's big enough to make Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, feel threatened and worry that soon these people will be almost as numerous as his own. You'll go downtown and you'll hear Hebrew spoken as much as you hear Egyptian. So Pharaoh comes up with a highly effective and unspeakably evil plan to control them. He targets the boys. Every Hebrew baby that is born, Pharaoh orders his Egyptian citizens is to be exterminated on sight. Throw them in the Nile. Pharaoh knows. Target the boys of the people you want to oppress, and eventually you will destroy them. And Moses, of course, was a boy. And so his mother did what she could. She hid him for a while. But babies grow. And when she could not hide him anymore, we read in verse 3, Moses' mother this daughter of Levi, does a priestly act. She takes a papyrus basket, looms it with the ancient equivalent of Kevlar, and makes a snug little ark, waterproof, for her three-month-old son. It's a brilliant act, a symbolic act designed to save life as well as to bear witness. And it is heartbreakingly limited. A Kevlar ark can't save a child for long. He is one day, maybe two, before he will die of exposure. One day, maybe two, to live. Anyone who finds him will get the mother's message loud and clear. This is what we have come to in Egypt. Take a look. Kevlar cradles. It is all I could do for my child. All I could give him was two more days. And with that, the mother leaves the scene. Maybe she was like Hagar, who couldn't bear to watch baby Ishmael die in the desert. We don't know. But we do know that it's the sister who takes over from here. That's what big sisters do. They watch when the parents leave. They report back. It may not be what they choose to do, but it's their job as part of the family. It was this sister's job. Stand at a distance and see what happens to your brother. Be the girl in the reeds and then come home. Verse 5, enter Pharaoh's daughter. She had a different agenda. She came down to the river to take a bath. She came down to get away from it all, the court, the publicity, the pressure, the pedestal. Being beautiful is a tough job, but that's what princesses are. Everything that we dream we could be. It's their job as part of the family. It was this princess's job. Take your maids, go down to the river, and anoint that lovely skin because we need you to look good this afternoon. Be the girl in the reeds, and then come home. So here they are, two girls in the reeds. Two girls who know what they're supposed to do, hide and watch, bathe and dress, do as you're told, and then come home. And they might have done it, and never even have met one another. But you know, the reeds are a watery, slippery, in-between sort of place. It's muddy and murky and hard to find your footing, and who knows where the deep water starts. Anything can happen down in the reeds to upset your balance. And on this day, something did. You know what it was. The princess found the baby. The Egyptian princess found the Hebrew baby. You know what she was supposed to do with it. So did she. So did the sister. And now what? What do you do with a baby in a basket when you're down in the reeds at the river's edge and the parents, your parents, are nowhere to be found? The princess knew what her father would have done, or at least what his law decreed. If this was a Hebrew male child, and it was, she was supposed to tip over that basket and let that baby tumble into the water. At the very least, if she couldn't stomach that, she was supposed to close the lid, give the little ark a push, send it on down the river for someone else to deal with. That's what the law required, like it or not, and she was supposed to uphold it. The sister knew what her mother would have wanted. If someone found the baby, even if that someone was an Egyptian, the sister was supposed to keep watching, as awful as things might get. She was supposed to stay in her hiding place so she wasn't seen and she wasn't caught, and then report to her mother what had happened. That's what times like these required, like it or not. And she was supposed to just get through it and survive. Two girls in the reeds with a little body between them. They knew what their parents would have wanted, and you know what? They didn't do it. They couldn't. Things look different when you're down in the reeds. You have to think for yourself. Look for yourself. Tell it like you see it, which is what the princess did. This, she said, must be one of the Hebrews' children. You know, sometimes the truth is the most radical thing you can say. Just to name it, what you see right in front of you, that body left for hours in the street, that baby left to die in a basket. Just telling the truth about it is huge, huge. Saying it out loud, letting the words reverberate in the air. This must be one of the Hebrews' children because no other mothers are reduced to this, making little arcs to float in the Nile, trying to save their babies from a flood of hate. One truth calls forth another, especially when you're in the reeds. One girl stammering out the truth of what she sees invites another girl to speak up too. One girl pausing over unspeakable evil encourages another one to stand with her. This must be one of the Hebrews' children, said the princess. And then the sister got an idea. Do you want me to find a nurse among the Hebrew women, she asked, stepping out of her hiding place? Do you want me to find someone to nurse that child for you? And just like that, they had a plan. A plan to save one life, no matter what their parents thought of it. And it was about the craziest plan you could think of, to take baby Moses back to his Hebrew mother for a few years and tell everyone it was just fine because he was there on Pharaoh's daughter's orders. Really, really. But they did it. And they got away with it. And when Moses was 3 years old, the princess actually adopted him. She took him into the palace and she raised him there with her father down the hall. And Lord only knows what he thought about this whole arrangement. Little Moses sitting in his booster seat at the royal table, riding his Toys R Us chariot through the throne room. Scripture never says a word about that. But as we said, this isn't a story about the parents and doing what they told you, even if your dad is the Pharaoh. This is a story about the young people doing whatever crazy thing they can dream up together to get the bodies out of the reeds. So now I'm wondering about you. I'm wondering what's going on at Hope College at the tail end of one of the most surreal years our country has ever had. I don't think I'm overestimating it to say that we are in the reeds, y'all. We are there. The shootings, the violence, they brought up things we haven't wanted to talk about in this country for years. Like, why does racism have such a grip on us? And what are we gonna do about guns? And how on earth are we gonna have conversations without shutting each other down? What do you do when you're down in that muddy, slippery, in-between place down in the reeds? How do you keep listening and talking and praying? I think this story has some things to say about that. So what happens if we bring these two girls to the streets of Holland, Michigan, and ask them to show us some new ways to be? Well, maybe one of the first things they'd say is what we've been picking up on all through this text. We don't have to read the world the way our parents read it. There will come a day when we are down in the reeds and our parents aren't there, and we have to decide for ourselves what we are going to do about this situation, this interruption, this baby in the basket, this Syrian child on the beach, this black boy in the street, this body right here, this body that matters. And if we've been taught to read the world, if the way we've been taught to read the world tells us that it doesn't matter, and that we can turn and walk away, well, then something has to change. And it's up to us. And maybe the second thing these two girls would say is that if you're down in the reeds and you don't know what to do next, start by telling the truth about what you see. Sometimes that is the most radical thing we can do, just to tell the truth about the body that's in front of us. This is one of the Hebrews' children. Just say it. Say it out loud, because one truth calls forth another, and you never know who may be listening. You never know who may be waiting for a reason to come out of their hiding place and stand with you and make a plan to save one life. And maybe the third thing they would say, these girls, is that this is how liberation starts. God's liberating work starts down in the reeds with an interruption we didn't expect and a body we have to acknowledge. God's liberation of a people can start with two girls and one really crazy idea. That's it. That's all you need. Because whenever the children of God claim the freedom to reimagine and remix the world, well, then Moses can grow up. The exodus out of slavery can begin. And I tell you what, we all need to leave Egypt. It is the next chapter of a perfect story. Maybe you'll write it.